If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Terry Savage from terrysavage.com, the syndicated financial columnist, is our Wednesday guest. Hi, Terry.
Hello. Interesting day.
We'll talk a little bit about money. Anything else you want to mention?
I'm going to try not to. One of the people who was murdered in Highland Park, it was a friend from so long ago that he helped me when I was a young stockbroker, and I most recently corresponded with him not 3 weeks ago about the markets. He was funny, witty, smart, Stephen Strauss. So I'm just a little bit on the edge of being on the edge.
I can just imagine. And so I'll ask you about the things we normally do, unless
yeah,
you want me to.
Yeah, let's talk about the things we normally talk
about. More
about
that.
But
fair enough.
And let's remember that when push comes to shove, your 401k is not the most critical thing in the world. Getting up every day and living in unafraid and peaceful and is actually more important.
Having said that, I'm now going to ask you about my 401k.
Okay, I want to. Did you get your statement yet, John?
I'm not going to look.
Wait, you have to look.
I think my stuff is all online. If they send me a paper in the mail, I haven't got it yet. But I have not looked at my account balance in a long time.
That's good. I read something. It was in the middle of all this, so I never bookmarked it. But I read something that said if you checked your statement every day, 54% of the days would have shown losses in the stock market, even though obviously over the last 25 years the market's up substantially, so maybe the losses were less. But if you checked every day, you'd have like about a 50-50 chance of losing money in your retirement plan based on the number of days that the market was down versus up. So it would really be idiotic to check your statement every day, because you're not using that money for another 20, 30, even if you're retiring now.
Well,
you're still going to use some of the money 20 years from now.
Idiotic. I mean, listen, everybody likes good news. I'll tell you what.
Well, it's masochistic. Here's what happened.
I was looking at it on the way up. I was very happy to click
exactly,
on that.
Exactly. So it was one of those habits that everybody got into when the stock market could do nothing but go up. It was like, oh, yeah, and let me just think one last happy thing for the day. I'll check my balance. Oh, I'm rich. That's great. Let me go spend.
Well, what do you suggest people do? I mean, we should pay attention, right?
Absolutely. And here is what's happening now. And this is really going to be frightening. The fact is that the stock market has had the worst two quarters in the first half since 40 years. And what's going to happen now is that many people who have refrained from looking, now you're just not looking now, but you admit you like to look when it was up. But what happens is many people get their statements on paper, especially those who are retired, and typically older people, you know, including myself, who want to file those quarterly statements. And you're going to get it. If you haven't already, here we are at the 6th, it'll be coming in the next week. And it's going to be a real shock, because even the most conservative portfolios, the ones that included bonds as well as stocks, have lost a lot of money. And you're going to get an immediate snapshot of, here's where you were at the end of last year, which if you're taking RMDs is the basis for the RMDs that you'll be taking throughout this year. Here's how much you lost by halfway through this year, the June 30th statement. And it's going to induce another round of panic. If you only knew that you must have been losing money but didn't know how much, you're about to see it in dollars and cents.
Don't open that envelope. That's what I say.
No. You have to open. Don't act when you open the envelope.
Okay,
don't
open
panic.
That envelope, but don't panic, I guess. Is the best advice.
And something new is on there as well.
Okay,
I should mention.
Tell me about that.
But I'll do it after the break.
You certainly will. Terry Savage from terrysavage.com, the syndicated financial columnist, is our Wednesday guest. Saw you on TV today too, Terry.
Oh, yeah, this morning, right. Well, but that was because yesterday was such a wild day, down 700-plus points.
Yeah.
And then came roaring back. I think the thing about the economy is, I watch it all the time now, every pundit has a different take on it. Are we already in a recession? I mean, that's only designated a couple months after the end of the second quarter, you know, with a negative GDP. But could it be because oil prices came down below $100 a barrel? Interest rates came down just 3 weeks ago when we were talking about mortgage rates peaking at 5.5%. All of a sudden, the 10-year Treasury note on which the mortgage rates are based was 3.5%. All of a sudden today, it's down to 2.75%. So the big question swirling among the economic soothsayers, has the Fed done enough? Have they raised rates enough? Oh, they'll have to raise them one more time at least, but maybe not too much more. Maybe the economy's already slowing, and maybe we'll see it in Friday's jobs report. And that's what kind of everybody's holding their breath for now. But just look, I urge you to look a little beyond our shores, because Europe is in real trouble. They're raising rates, and their energy prices, their gasoline prices, are already 20% higher than our own. And the next big crisis, you know how in the winter we were talking about gasoline prices this summer? Well, now think about what heating fuel, natural gas, will be in the winter. There seems to be a global shortage of getting it in the right place, and Russia will likely turn off the spigot, and that's where most of Western Europe gets its natural gas. So the world is in a very strange situation around energy right now. The president's going to Saudi Arabia next week. I don't think he's going hat in hand to say, please pump more, but they're the only ones that could make a difference, aside from saying to the U.S. oil companies, please pump more, which they haven't been willing to do. So if you're confused, you're not alone. So is the stock market.
You, before the break, I kind of cut you off there. You were talking about looking at your statements.
Okay, here's something big and new. It's a result of the Secure Act, a Financial Services Act passed by Congress before COVID, 2019. And one of the things that came out of that is that by now, by the second quarter of 2022, the 401k plan providers had to give you something called a projection of lifetime income, assuming that your balance today is what it is, and if you were currently age 67. Now, you know, you may be 37, 22, just contributing a little bit, 45 or 61, getting close to retirement. But for every account, they have to look at your current balance as if you were age 67 and tell you, based on current actuarial projections of life expectancies, what your income would be. So, for example, a 401k balance of $125,000, if you were 67 today, would translate into a lifetime income of just $600 a month. Now, I mean, that may be disappointing to you, but it doesn't take into account, of course, that you're 37 and you're going to contribute for a lot more years, and you'll contribute a lot more over the years as your salary increases. So that's one part of how misleading it is. I hope it scares you into contributing more. And the other part is, what about a lifetime income of $600 a month? By the rule of 72, which is a financial kind of a quick rule, if inflation were 8%, your buying power would be cut in half in 10 years, less than 10 years. Of that fixed check, which is why we like Social Security, because it gets a cost of living adjustment. So basically, if you're going to look at your statement, you're going to see, if you were 67, your current balance, what it would be worth in lifetime income. If it shocks you and says, I better contribute more, that's a good idea, but it basically is very unrealistic unless you are 67.
I want to take a couple phone calls, of course,
okay,
and read some text messages. 312-981-7200. We'll start with Claudia. Claudia, what can we do for you? You're on with Terry.
Yes, I was just wondering. I sent in my money that I owed the Treasury Department and the state of Illinois on income tax payments, and they have not cashed a check from April. Is the IRS so far behind in opening up the mail?
No, they're not. And that should... Did you send it registered mail?
No. Sent it regular mail.
Always have to send it registered mail. Now you need to go to the IRS website and create something called an ID.me account. You can get a link to that. If you go to terrysavage.com on the homepage, there are four boxes about halfway down on the right, and it says create an IRS ID Me account. It'll give you the link. They do slash open those envelopes immediately. I was there at the IRS Service Center many years ago when it was all paper, and they look for those checks and deposit them. So it's possible that your account is just piled up and they haven't gotten to it. Maybe it slipped through, but I would urge you to contact the IRS. And from now on, everybody send your checks or any filings with the IRS that you do by mail, by registered mail, return receipt requested.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your help. I'll do that.
Good luck to you. 773 says, how is the IRS doing with backlogs? I guess you're addressing that now.
It's very interesting because there have been many people that I told this was going to, that I had posted on my blog, and I said to them, and be sure and let me know when you do get yours. Most of the people who were delayed in getting refunds either didn't file electronically or didn't include direct deposit information. So I just, maybe a day or two ago, got a posting from someone who said, I thought you'd like to know I filed in March and I finally just got my refund in the mail and I will always do it electronically from now on.
630, Terry Savage, I just inherited $65,000. I plan to put them all in the stock market index fund. Should I dollar cost average or just lump sum right now?
Boy, that, you're asking me, is this the absolute bottom? And should I put it all in now? I'll never know, and neither will you. But let me say, when you come into found money like this, you might take a broader look at what you're going to do. I don't know your age. I don't know your circumstances. I would suggest that if you have any credit card debt, typically at 19, 20, 23%, you immediately pay that off. Second of all, if you're earning income and you qualify for perhaps a Roth IRA, you take some of that money, $6,000 or $7,000 if you're over 50, and make the account that you invest in a Roth IRA, so all the gains will come out tax-free. And in general, I would suggest, because I hate being wrong about my investments, I would suggest that you maybe start with $10,000 investment now and put the whole thing at, say, if you went to Fidelity, you'd put the whole thing in a money market account that you'd open up, and you'd start out with $10,000 in their S&P 500 index fund and say to them, okay, put $3,000 or $5,000 a month in on the 10th of the month, and that way you'll never hit the top, but you'll never hit the bottom either.
Would you put $10,000 in an I-bond right away?
Oh, God, that's a really good suggestion. Absolutely, because the current rate, of course, is 9.62%. That may not and likely won't continue in the future, but that's also growing for you on a tax-deferred basis.
I'll be taking your calls for all
yes,
of your
John,
financial
very good
questions
idea.
At 312-981-7200. That would be a bad show. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. It's Wednesday. So Terry Savage is our guest for about five, 6 more minutes here. Terry, I want to get in some more phone calls. Anything else you want to drop in before we go?
No, let's do it. I love the phone calls.
All right, Lynn, let's start with Jim. You're on WGN with Terry Savage. Jim, what can we do for you?
Well, hello, John and Terry. Last year at about this time, I called in asking for some guidance about staying the course and not collecting Social Security until age 70. And so my wife heard it, everybody heard it, and I wanted to say that next week I turned 70, and I'm getting that big increase.
So that's wonderful. You should see the smile on my face. I'm so glad. It will make a big difference, and then, of course, next year you're going to get a huge cost of living increase on top of the increase in the base pay. So great move. And how did you survive without the check? Did you just deny yourself the few extra things that would buy?
You know, we have some pensions coming in, and we just didn't think about it, actually. And
good for you.
We survived. We just survived through it. And it was a great thing.
Great role model for everyone else who has the ability to make the choice. We
Thank
never
you for
forget.
Saying that, yeah.
Some people don't
right.
have the choice of delaying. But if you can, believe me, I wish you a long and healthy life, and you'll get paid back many times over with that higher base and the future cost of living increases.
Yep.
Thanks for calling.
And thank you very much.
And boy, Jim, nice to talk to you again. This is Glenn. Nice of him to call back a year later. Glenn, you're on WGN. How can we help you, Glenn?
Hey, good morning. It's time for my RMD. And my question is, I have my IRA spread out among 10 different fund families, And now that I have to take the money out, do I have to take out the X percentage out of each fund, or can I take the entire RMD out of one fund and just close it so I can eliminate some paperwork?
Absolutely, you can do that. You do not have to take it out of one fund or percentage-wise out of each fund. But what you do need to do, and 10 is probably too much now, 10 different fund families. For a long time, I had a lot of fund families because I wanted to get the mailings from all of them. You know, I was writing about them. But sure. I consolidated way back. You need to go back to your December 31st statement from 2021 for each of those. Add them all up. Tell that one custodian that now your RMD is $22,000. You've got $23,000 left in the account. You can take the whole amount out. You can always take out more than your RMD and then close that account. You'll get notices, by the way, from all the other nine fund families reminding you for an RMD, but you can ignore that knowing you took them all out of one.
Good question and good information. Thanks, Glenn. How about you, Jean? You're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, I wanted to know, Terry, how we would purchase I-bonds, where we go for that.
All right, that's all done online through the government website, treasurydirect.gov. And if you go to terrysavage.com, on the right side of the homepage, about halfway down, there are four little boxes, and one of them says saving how to buy I-bonds. So you can use that as a guide, and there's a link right there to set up an account. You need your name, your Social Security number, and your bank account number and the bank routing number, because they take the money out of your checking account or money market fund account to buy the bonds, and then they will you'll see that in your Treasury Direct account.
Okay, and that's a safest way to do it, probably.
That's
right?
The only way to do it. I know everybody's worried about it.
Way.
People who buy savings bonds are thinking, oh, I just want to go to my bank and get that piece of paper. The only way you can buy savings bonds now is online through treasurydirect.gov. It is the safest. They transfer literally trillions of dollars of government securities through treasury bills, notes, and bonds and savings bonds on a daily basis through this website, so don't be worried.
Good luck to you on that, and it's a good question. Our John Hansen had the same sort of apprehension when the rate adjusted so favorably. He, like many people, jumped on the bandwagon, and John has described how he was a little apprehensive about it. He said it is a little more secure feeling, the way they set up a code for you. And then the next day, he looked, and the money was there in the account where he had moved it to. So hooray, it works. And so to those of you that maybe have questions about that, you want a firsthand experience from somebody new to that, ask John Hansen about that this evening or any Monday through Thursday at 6 o'clock. Okay, time for one more call, Pete says, and that's going to be Gary. Gary, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Hey, Terry, question. I want to open up a Vanguard brokerage account for a 13-year-old teenager, start teaching her some things. What fund would I place that money in?
Okay, first of all, you know that if you ever apply for financial aid, a custodial account you have for your minor child will count very heavily against you. That's number one. Number two, you probably don't, depends on how much money you want to put in. If you want to do a teaching lesson, I would go to stockpile.com where they're set up to do small amounts of shares, any kind of stock you want to buy. And that would be a better teaching place than just a Vanguard account where you presumably would put in a hunk of money and it could impact financial aid.
Okay, impact financial aid even if I'm a grandpa?
It will impact the child's financial aid. Money in a custodial account for the child is considered a child's asset. They're moving things around, but just go take a visit to stockpile.com and see if that isn't absolutely set up for what you want to do to teach the child to pick, you know, do I wear Nike shoes or do I wear Adidas? Do I want to buy, you know, whatever stock that they've heard of or they use, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, something like that. Try a visit to stockpile.com. I think it's really what you really want to be doing. And if you want to put a hunk of money away for your grandchild, then open a 529 college savings account where it won't be used till they're changing the rules anyway. It would be a great way to put away a lot of money. But for individual stocks, try Stockpile.
That's Terry Savage, terrysavage.com. Remember, we always podcast these broadcasts, so later today, this evening, if you want to hear this or share it with somebody, go to WGNradio.com. Click on the Wintrust Business Lunch on Wednesday. Okay, Terry, we'll talk next week.
Absolutely. Thanks, John.
WGN Radio News at the top of the hour in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right now, more business news from Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Amazon Prime members will soon have a tasty new benefit. Amazon purchased a small stake in Chicago's Grubhub and will add the Grubhub Plus service to its Amazon Prime program. Members in the U.S. will receive 1 year of free access to the service. It allows users to order delivery with zero fees. Amazon attempted its own food delivery service in 2015, but shut it down 4 years later after facing tough competition from Grubhub, Uber Eats, and Postmates. United Airlines is blaming the Federal Aviation Administration and the nation's air traffic control system for making travel troubles worse this summer. The airline says the agency has been overwhelmed by the volume of flights and estimates more than 50% of its delay minutes and 75% of its cancellations in the past 4 months were because of FAA actions to manage air traffic. The FAA can hold aircraft in flight, assign specific departure times, issue ground delays, and reroute planes. United says there are just more flights scheduled than the air traffic control system can handle. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food and Steve Alexander.
And we are happy to be sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. At least two of the Chicago food innovators we've heard from recently got their start at a place called The Hatchery. Matt Waxman of Cushy Croutons is one of them.
We started making our croutons initially out of The Hatchery, and they were incredibly helpful. They were actually the ones that first connected us to Mariano's, one of our earliest accounts and another incredible supporter of local brands.
So let's find out more about The Hatchery.
Sure. The Hatchery is a nonprofit food and beverage incubator based on the west side of Chicago. We're located in East Garfield Park. It's more accessible for that community than going to the kitchen spaces downtown.
That's Darren DeLima, the marketing communications manager.
The Hatchery opened in 2018, and it was built out of a market demand in the area for the food and beverage industry. We had seen so many businesses growing without the resources that were needed to do so in the area. And again, we specifically concentrate on BIPOC-led and women-owned and West Side resident-developed businesses, as those brands bring the most inventive and innovative flavors.
The Hatchery was started by a couple of West Side groups, the Industrial Council of Near West Chicago, and Allies for Community Business. And it's big.
So we're a state-of-the-art 67,000 square foot facility, 54 private kitchens, a large co-working area, an event and ideation space, and with a built-out curriculum of programming and the influence of the local community, we get to support each other in exciting ways that really help these small businesses grow.
And Darren DeLima says on average, at any one time, there are over 200 people in the facility working on turning their food ideas into a brand. And if you have an idea for the next big food thing?
We always encourage people to first start with our Starting a Food Business class, which there is no cost for if you're a West Side resident. There's no barrier for entry. We work with a lot of different types of entrepreneurs from different backgrounds.
TheHatcheryChicago.org. From the farm to your belly, today is National Fried Chicken Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Every now and then you hear that commercial where I say that term insurance is really inexpensive right now. I wanted to just explore that for a minute. Bob Bland is the founder and chief executive officer at LifeQuotes. LifeQuotes.com is their website. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Doing well. Doing well. Great to talk to you again.
I don't want to waste a lot of time on it, but we always say term life insurance is historically inexpensive right now. Is that still true?
It is. It is. Rates are right now at all-time lows, which is a very interesting phenomenon given the recent news that deaths in the United States among working people 18 to 64 rose last year significantly. Non-COVID deaths, I'm talking about. Presumably healthy people who are working. So there's some things going on that are, cloudy. But right now, term life insurance rates are at all-time lows.
Term. So if I was doing a variable rate, some sort of a more permanent life insurance, are those rates low also?
They are. They are as well. They, of course, cost more than term, but they are low as well. And it's somewhat not fully explainable to us, but it's a great example of a free market working because you have hundreds of competing life insurers are competing for the consumer's dollar. And that's a good thing.
Well, So do you sell both, or is it just term? And there's advantages to term, but also some disadvantages. Can you weigh those pros and cons for me?
Sure. We sell term life, universal life, and whole life. And universal life and whole life are commonly called permanent insurance because they're designed to provide you with level premiums and level death benefit for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. At a known cost that cannot change. So that's very attractive to certain people in certain circumstances who know what they want for the rest of their life, whereas term life insurance is for a specific period of time, such as 10 years on the low side, typically, to maybe 40 years on the high side. They're typically bought by adults who have children or a mortgage or both to cover loss of earnings should a breadwinner die.
So as you get older, say you have fewer obligations, you don't have to worry about raising your kids or getting them through college, maybe even you're close to paying off your home loan, you don't need insurance.
If you do your financial planning correctly, I would agree with that. I would say you don't need it. Now, there's some exceptions, and there's some people who where the mortgage is getting paid off, the children have left the home, there's less overhead, they have maybe have more money than ever. We notice that when people come up on their term life renewal, they'll say, well, how much does $100,000 of permanent insurance cost? I just simply want that in place. So maybe they had $500,000 or $1 million in place while the kids were being raised, where the big financial exposure is, of course, school costs. But now their horizon and their outlook is entirely different.
Yeah.
And this is something spouses will do to cover each other.
Yeah.
And buy a longer term, more guaranteed type policy so that they don't have to go through medical underwriting again.
Yeah, that's, I think, scary for some people. Are some people absolutely excluded from the market then?
There are people excluded from the market due to health conditions. But when you run a company like LifeQuotes.com, where we track the rates of 50 companies, we do have products for people that have very, very serious health conditions. Now, you might be limited to 25 or 30,000 of coverage, but we can get a policy in place, and that is often a lot better than nothing.
Mm. What else should I be asking you about here? Isn't there a level to term, a level term to age 70 life insurance now?
There is. There are some new plans out there up to age 70 that ask no health questions whatsoever, and those will go up to $50,000, and people will see those at LifeQuotes.com if that product is of interest to them. And those typically cost around $69 a month. So they're very, very affordable, and they don't ask health questions, and that's people like that. You can buy that stuff very easily and quickly.
This is Bob Bland from LifeQuotes. So are you representing all of those companies, or are you working for one? It sounds like you're an insurance broker, and I could get any one of 50 companies. Is that right?
Yes. We're what's called an independent agency or independent broker. And so we really, the customer is our boss, and we built a large database of 50 companies' rates, and we built in their underwriting guidelines. So people with health conditions can come in and get accurate quotes, and we also have an anonymous format where you don't have to tell us who you are. You could simply visit our website and get your own quotes, and you don't have to enter your name, your address, your email, your personal phone. You don't have to do any of that. You're just welcome to come in and view the quotes, and we know if you're interested in those quotes, you'll raise your hand.
Last question, and we'll visit another day, but is there a range of prices from these companies?
Well, the prices are highly, highly dependent in the life insurance market, John, on the individual characteristics, the height, weight, and health of the applicant. And your dangerous hobby profile plays a role in this as well, and your financial needs. So the prices are very, very highly customizable. But right now, an average 50-year-old in good health could buy a $1 million term policy for $57 a month.
Hmm. Okay,
as an example.
Yeah, no kidding. I was wondering about that. I'll ask you more about those numbers next time. But that's Bob Bland, the founder and chief executive over at LifeQuotes.com. It's a Chicago company doing this right here in River City. Okay, Bob, let's visit again another day. Thanks for the help.
Thanks, John. Great to talk to you.
It is. LifeQuotes.com. I think their number is 1-800-TERM-LIFE. That's easy to remember.